Hi everyone, I'm home again. Oh man, it's nice to be home. I mean, that was a totally epic trip. And honestly, it was like one of the best things that I've done professionally. And of course, just in case you're tuning in now, this was the congressional testimony thing last week in DC. So it was epic, very, very long-lasting memories. Very, very glad to be back at home in my normal environment. Not dressed in a suit. I mean, actually, the suit was kind of cool just for like a really short period of, you know, got a little bit dressed up. I'm back in t-shirt and board shorts and things like that, which is how I shall stay for quite some time now. So just for those of you who are kind of wondering about distances and everything, to get from there back to here, I think it was about 34 hours door to door, which was actually kind of painful. There were actually a couple of other things along the way, though, which were less painful. So I actually went from DC down to Atlanta in Georgia, and Pluralsight had a customer day on there, which was great. So I went along to the customer day and spoke about the cybers, which was actually really interesting. Had some very interesting people there. So that was actually a really cool chat. And what was also cool about it is they did it at a Porsche Experience spot in Atlanta. So basically the agenda was go and talk about cybers for 40 minutes or something like that, just answering questions, and then go and drive the cars around they had just like a little racetrack there, which was good fun. So it's always nice to drive someone else's car on a racetrack, because trust me, it gets very expensive driving your own on a racetrack. So that was cool. And then the next day on Saturday, I headed back home, and the problem with heading to Australia, we've established it's on the other side of the world to everything. The problem, particularly heading back to where I am, is you get like one flight on Qantas per day from the US, and it's only from LA, and it's always at like 11:30 at night. And I got into LA just after lunch, which meant that basically I think I had like a 10 and a half hour layover. So I ended up going into Beverly Hills so that I could look at the cars and wander around. So I spent my day sort of wandering around there and then flying home. And then, you know, frankly, since then, trying to recover. So I'm still at this stage of regularly waking up at 4 a.m., which is, well, look, I often do anyway, but I'm just really tired by the end of the day. So I'm just trying to get back into the normal cycle. But be that as it may, I am home, which is really, really nice. And I'm going to be home for the rest of the year. And I know there's not much of the year left. Or at least I'm going to be home in Australia. Actually, next week I'm going to be down in Sydney for an event, which is an invite-only event, but I will be down there talking about more cybers again. And then I'll also be down in Melbourne later in the week as well. But these are like 1-2 hour domestic flights. No dramas. I'll be in Brisbane for the week after doing a workshop. And then I'm not going overseas again until the middle of Jan when I get back to London and all these other things. I'll talk more about those in a later update. Let me get on to the stuff this week, because there was an absolute zinger this week, which I didn't see coming. And it was one of these things where, like, you know, I've sort of, in my mind, I'm figuring out what I'm going to do for the day and the week and everything else. And it was going to be, like, kind of relaxing. And then this thing came out, and I just couldn't help but take a large chunk of my day on Monday writing about this. And I just read the title, The Trouble with Politicians Sharing Passwords. Now, you may see this term, sharing passwords, and go, who would do that? Why would anyone do that? So let me explain what's going on. And I know some of you would have seen this already, but I want to add my sort of, I don't know, charisma, for want of a better term, my sort of emotions to this. When I was in LA, wandering around looking at the nice cars, amusing myself, I saw a tweet that a few people pointed me to, and it was from a British politician, someone called Nadine Dorries. And I'm going to read the tweets just so that everyone gets the context here. She says, my staff log onto my computer on my desk with my login every day, including interns on exchange programs. For the officer on BBC News just now to claim that the computer on Green's desk was accessed and therefore it was Green is utterly preposterous. Now, you know, when you see this and you go, here is someone sharing credentials, all right, not so good, but then tweeting about it, and they're also an MP, and they're also basically going, this is cool, you start to wonder whether something might be amiss. And I responded to this, I put out a little quote tweet, and this was, of course, just after I'd been in Congress doing government things, And it's not that I was reserved. I was like, oh, you know, I'm kind of being parliamentary at the moment, so I'll be nice and, you know, I guess objective about this. And I said, this illustrates a fundamental lack of privacy and security education. All the subsequent reasons given for why it's necessary have technology solutions which provide traceability back to an individual identifiable user. Now, what I was talking about here, because when you read the thread beneath this, what Nadine was saying is she's saying, I get a lot of emails. And in fact, she says, you know, she gets 300 emails or something a day, which is a lot of emails. And she needs help dealing with them. So she needs staffers to be able to access her emails so that they can process and reply and everything, which is cool. There's nothing wrong with that. But there are ways of dealing with this without handing over your password. Now, I'm going to come back to those in a moment because I want to talk just a little bit about why this was even a thing. So why was she even talking about this? Because you'll see how this all sort of ties back in. It's crazy. There's a bloke called Damien Green, who's a politician in the UK. He's a bloke, looks like he's in about his 60s or thereabouts. He's in a bit of hot water because he had some porn on his computer. Now, as a politician using government-provided machines, you don't really want to have porn on your computer. It is not a good look. And the irony of this situation is that Nadine was sort of saying, yes, he has porn on his computer, but because we all share our credentials, how can you be sure it was him that put the porn on the computer? Maybe it was an intern on an exchange program who put the porn on his computer. And right about now, you should start to sort of say, maybe it's not such a good idea that we actually share our credentials so that we no longer have any accountability back to an individual. Mind you, a lot of people were then saying, this is plausible deniability. Now, I think most of us know what plausible deniability is anyway, but let me read the quote, Let me actually read the definition of it, because when you actually see the definition, this is when you sort of start to go, oh, from a politician perspective, this suddenly makes a lot of sense. Plausible deniability is the ability of people, typically senior officials in a formal or informal chain of command, to deny knowledge of or responsibility for any damnable actions, such as porn on your computer, committed by others in an organizational hierarchy because of a lack of evidence that can confirm their participation, even if they were personally involved in or at least willfully ignorant of the actions. And when you read it like that, you go, wow, like that just absolutely nails it, doesn't it? That absolutely nails why someone would try and not get caught with porn on their computer. Now, I want to actually go back and talk about some of the things I raised in this blog post because they're really quite important. Now, one of them was Nadine is not alone, right? It doesn't surprise me that there are other people sharing credentials. What did surprise me is other people coming out publicly and going, yeah, sure, I do it as well. There's a bloke here, Nick Bowles, MP. Now, keeping in mind as well, I don't know who any of these people are. I don't know who most Australian politicians are, let alone politicians on the other side of the world. So Nick goes, I certainly do. In fact, I often forget my password and have to ask my staff what it is. Good one, Nick. There's another bloke here, James Clayton. It is extremely common for MPs to share their parliamentary login details with their staff. Seems slightly unfair to vilify Nadine for what is common practice. And there's a point here I sort of go, just because a lot of people do it doesn't mean you shouldn't vilify people for doing it. Of course you should vilify them. Okay, maybe the right word is not vilify, but maybe it's not even berate. Maybe you should be able to tell them that this isn't such a good thing to do. Nick again. I seem to have started a hair running. As an MP, I employ 4 people to deal with the emails and letters constituents send me. They need access to these communications to do their jobs. No one else has access. Passwords are regularly changed. And you go, you know, the National Cybersecurity Centre in the UK has just been coming out saying, let's not mandate like regular rotation and forced changes of passwords. Now, if you want to do it on your own, then that's great. But inevitably, what he's saying here is that they're forcibly changed. And the funny thing is, the NCSC stuff is very much like, let's do other lots of really good, sensible security things. And then it's less important anyway to change it. But if you're doing one of the unsensible, I don't know if that's a word, things with your passwords, i.e. sharing it with other people, well, then, yeah, you're actually going to need to change it. There's another bloke here, Will Quince. Less login sharing and more that I leave my machine unlocked so that it can, so that they can use it if needs be. My office manager does know my login, though. Ultimately, I trust my team. Now, let's dissect this. First of all, leaving your machine unlocked. There's a really good reason we don't do this, because other people could access it. But by design, he's going, I leave it unlocked so that other people could access it. So that's kind of worrying. The bit here as well about, I ultimately trust my team. Now, this is where it gets really interesting. I would imagine that Damian Green trusted his team as well. He probably trusted his team not to go and browse porn while he's not away from it. Yet here we are having this discussion, assuming it was his team, plausible deniability. So you kind of see the problem here. This is not about trust. This is about verifiable accountability. This is about being able to know for sure, or at least with a very, very high degree of confidence, when something happens under someone's identity, it was them who was using the machine at the time. None of this is about trust, and there are so many cases of people in positions of trust abusing it that this just becomes an absolutely ridiculous argument. And I make the point in here of Edward Snowden. Now, regardless of whether you agree with what Ed did or not, everyone agrees that he was in a position of trust. Everyone also knows that he managed to get passwords from other people who trusted him because he seemed like a good bloke or whatever it was at the time. And then the rest is history. So that this premise of just trusting people, like, this is just not what it is about. Now, moving on. So the problem with credential sharing. See, what I was trying to say here, in fact, this is about the problem credential sharing is trying to solve. Let us acknowledge for a moment that this is being done for a reason, right? I mean, the sharing of passwords. And the reason is that MPs do get a lot of emails. MPs get a lot of emails, executives get a lot of emails. There are people in various positions that get a lot of emails. And the necessity to actually deal with it some way is very important. Now, you know, Nadine sort of says here, she has a team of 4 to 6 staff members answering 300 emails every day, yada, yada. Another bloke chimes in here, Matthew Peterson. He says, I don't blame her. I blame the IT department for not managing this risk adequately. It isn't up to her to have to defend this. Well, actually, it kind of is, because there are policies that are very explicit about not doing this. We'll come back to those. So, yeah, she's done the wrong thing. She has a valid business need, and IT needs to meet this need and also be secure. IT is the group that should be explaining themselves, not her. Now, I'm going to come back to this premise after I talk about this, because I've written another piece related to this in particular. But what he's sort of saying is that there is a business need. So let's agree with that, right? There is a business need, which is, I get a lot of emails. I need other people to be able to deal with emails that aren't necessarily me. Now, delegated access, because this is the thing, right? Like, as soon as this started getting traction, anyone who's got half a clue about how to actually set up email accounts and manage them in a corporate environment is like, well, why don't you just use delegated access? And this is kind of the point, you know, and I've got multiple people here quoted saying, hey, there's this whole delegated access thing. And I then go down and give an example of Office 365 and Exchange. And you literally go into your account settings, down to delegate access, give others permission to receive items and respond on your behalf. And apparently the entire UK members of parliament are running on O365 as well, which does have delegated access built into it. And the whole premise here, and you guys probably know this because you're technical people, the whole premise is that it may be that I get a lot of emails and I want other people to be able to access my emails and then reply on my behalf. So what you do is you go delegated access, give this person, this person, this person access, job done, everyone's good. They still can't act under my identity, and there is now a nice audit trail of who they are and what they're doing. So that the thing that confounded me here is that it is just such a simple solution baked into the platform that, first of all, MPs doing the wrong thing can't complain that there isn't an option. And second of all, those who are blaming the IT departments, there's a solution there already. And the, like, the silly thing is they then go, oh, well, maybe the IT department should have explained it better. Well, we will come back to that. Now, what I was finding here was just fundamental lack of knowledge by people about how these things work. So, for example, there's a bloke here, bloke, girl, might be, I don't know. We had a little bit of a Twitter argument where one of the things I've said here is, have you tried to have group editing of a document using multiple logins? It is hard enough with source code. Try making Word do that. Standard IT does not support the concept of group work. If you want to secure it, point a security camera at the console. We have had the premise of teams collaborating on things together for a very long time. But this is not a new thing, right? We have had for many, many, many years things like SharePoint team services. I remember back in the day, this is probably like 15 years ago now, probably would have been early 2000s, setting up SharePoint in order to do things like this. Now, in those cases, it was very much things like lock the document for editing and other people edit and then they check it back in and you're all good. And that would version do stuff like that as well. Today, we've got stuff like Google Docs. Anyone who's ever used Google Docs with multiple people before will be familiar with being able to literally see someone else writing in the document while you're writing there. This is a solved problem. And what we're hearing more than anything is that the people needing access to these resources just simply don't know that they exist. And there's a very valid discussion to be had about this. You know, is there an education gap somewhere? But the discussion is not, the technology can't do this, we're going to do something shit with our passwords. That's not the discussion I have. So anyway, this goes on. I give a bit of example as well. So Word's got some real-time co-authoring stuff. I share that too. the plausible deniability thing, we've covered that. It's just funny in retrospect. Now, yeah, I talk a little bit about the ramifications as well. And I've got multiple examples in here of people who don't necessarily have malicious intent coming undone as a result of sharing credentials. Now, again, it just blows my mind that we're even having this discussion. I'm going to go on because I don't want to dwell on that too much. What I did want to touch on here is that there are a couple of documents from the British government, including targeted at members of parliament, which talk about specifically protect information held electronically by not sharing passwords. That is in there. It's very explicit. You must not share your password. And the reason I wanted to bring this out is that if you're on a corporate environment or a government environment, you have almost certainly gone through onboarding training, annual training, seen those stupid inane security posters around the place, which explicitly say, don't share your password. You can't share your password. Don't ever share your password. Keep your password safe. Ignorance is not an excuse here. Everyone has seen this. Everyone knows this. And again, there's the bit here where we can say, well, they were trying to solve another problem. Great, go and see the IT department and get them to help you solve the problem. And this is sort of where I ultimately end up going here. Say, look, let us not debate the fact that there is a challenge, a business need, that they're trying to overcome. But go and talk to your IT department and the IT department will help you solve it. Now, interesting fallouts as a result of this. And I don't know how much of this is my fault. And I don't know how much of it is simply because it did just get a lot of traction anyway, because a lot of people sharing this. But the ICO, so the Information Commissioner's Office in the UK, who do some very excellent work, by the way, they tweeted saying, we're aware of reports that MPs share logins and passwords and are making inquiries of the relevant parliamentary authorities. We would remind MPs and others of their obligations under the Data Protection Act to keep personal data secure. We have also seen, actually, you know what, I won't mention that one because that might be a private discussion. There have been other agencies in the UK taking interest in this. Let's just say that. So this has now well and truly come across the radar of officials who are going, we probably shouldn't be doing this. We've got to find a better way of sorting this out. So it will be interesting to see what happens as a result. Nadine has been strangely silent on the matter. Since the likes of the ICO started chiming in. So I suspect some people may have had a quiet chat to her and some other MPs. Now, another thing. As a result of this, also did a follow-up piece on my Security Sense column. Now, the Security Sense column hasn't gone live yet. So Windows IT Pro have sort of changed their process where I used to self-publish, now I've got to email it to someone. So it hasn't gone up, but I want to talk about it now because it feeds directly off the discussion I've just had, and then next week I can talk about new stuff. And I've written a piece called Corporate Policies on Sharing Passwords Aren't Just Friendly Advice. And I'm conscious that for my IT Pro piece, I'm talking more to IT pros, but I think this is relevant for everyone. And I really just wanted to hammer home for a moment the fact that policies like this aren't just things where you say, oh, it didn't really work for me, so I just circumvented it. Like, this is just a bullshit excuse. And I want to talk about it in a bit more detail here. So I picked up on three things here. I said, look, when you see an organization stand up any sort of acceptable use policy, you know, the policy is not, it'd be kind of nice if you did do this stuff and didn't do that stuff. The policy is very explicit. Don't do that, but do the, you know, like, it's not open for interpretation. And I've read out some of the policies on passwords before. It isn't like, don't share your passwords unless it's making life hard for you, in which case you can give it to interns that are on an exchange program. Like, that's not in there. That's not a caveat. It's very explicit. Now, then there's this whole argument of, you know, IT needs to meet business requirements. And, you know, like, this is true. And I agree wholeheartedly that the technology departments have got to be enabling functions. They've got to help you work better. They're not there to get in your way. And if they get in your way, you should make an issue of it. But this is the point. There is a way to do this. The way to do it is you go to the technology department or to the CIO or whatever it may be, and you say, the technology is getting in my way. What can we do about it? And what you may well actually find out is that there is a better way of dealing with it. Delegated access controls, for example. So in a case like this, people should be standing up and saying, help me do my job. Now, I don't know how well organized the MP's IT department is in terms of providing education and letting them know what options are available. But I do know that if someone stands up and says, hey, I'm considering sharing my password with my staffers in order to meet this requirement, they're going to be, first of all, told no, and second of all, be told about the whole delegation thing. Now, finally, and I know this is a bit of a rant now, but it just got me worked up. Finally, I've said, look, there's actually some very good reasons why we have these policies. You know, and frankly, for most IT policies, there is usually some reason somewhere why it is there. Now, in fairness, I don't always think that they always make sense, and I don't think that they should be immutable as well. The changing of your passwords on a regular cadence is a perfect example. I know why it's there. I know why it made sense in the past. We're moving on and evolving. However, for things like sharing your password or leaving your PC unlocked, we know damn well why these things are there, and they're there for very good reasons. And circumventing it just because it becomes an inconvenience is not cool. And as a number of different people said, in a lot of organizations, that's actually a fireable offense. You know, like, if someone went and started sharing their credentials with all sorts of other people, it's literally the sort of thing that could get you kicked out. And that's not a great thing to have on your CV. Okay, so that was all that. And I know I got kind of carried away on that, in part because it's about the only thing that I've actually written this week. I've had a bunch of other stuff to catch up on after last week. And also in part because it was just one of those head-smackingly crazy things. All right, now a few other things, moving on. You might see I'm in a different position here in the office. You might also see it's getting uncharacteristically dark outside. I was out this morning and it was a nice, I think we were at 26 degrees or something in the sun playing tennis. It was beautiful and it's become overcast. So unfortunately that's not so good for me. I'm in a different position with a different setup. I'm going to be doing some stuff coming up, which I can't talk about yet, where we're going to be getting a lot more video of a more professional quality, or at least of editing of a more professional quality than what I'm doing now. We're going to see more about that next month, and I'll share what I can when we get up to that point. Other things as well. So sponsorship. I've got Gold Security sponsoring me again this week, and Gold Security have been there, I just checked my records today, ever since October last year, one of the very first sponsors that I had on board. So I'm enormously appreciative to those guys. We're going to see Gold Security again a lot next year as well, because I've just gone and reached out to a whole bunch of existing sponsors, because I realized I was like booked out until Christmas Eve and then nothing. because I have not been well organized enough. So I reached out to all the existing sponsors and put a tweet out for new ones as well. And I have now filled out about 2/3 of 2018 with sponsorship slots. I would love to fill out the other 1/3 as well. Those 2/3 are distributed across the year, so I've got slots all the way across. I'd love to fill out the remaining slots as well. So please do get in touch with me. There's a big sponsor link on the top of my blog as well, if you're interested. And until then, again, a big thanks to Gold Security for just being there and helping this model work so well. And everyone I speak to agrees that this works enormously well. So I'm very, very happy about that. So that is it. Next week, I will be, you know what, I'm getting home from Melbourne on Friday morning. So I'm going to play the game of get home, record my video, see how long it takes to upload over Australian bandwidth. Do I end up just paying the $10 a gigabyte over 4G to get it in time for the end of the day? Australian problems. Thank you very much for watching. And again, look, I really appreciate all the feedback I've had over, particularly over last week from the Congress and everything. It was just an absolutely epic, massive, significant life experience. And I'm really grateful for everyone that tuned in and contributed to that. Thanks very much, guys. I will see you next week.